expense now. I
yes.
think that was still done at General Street.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I will, I'm going to say, explain this. So yeah, thanks a lot to make it to this last talk. And so yes, I'm Gouven Kemener. So now I'm at Laboratoire Aimé Cotton in Université Paris Sud in Orsay, back in France, where I got a CNRS position here. This is the picture of the Laboratoire Aimé Cotton, so in the middle of the woods. It's a nice picture. This work was performed when I was a postdoc at GILA, so that's why I still included the picture of GILA, and I would like also to acknowledge my former supervisor, John Bone. And I'm going to talk about dipolar scattering in a magnetic trap and in the presence of an electric field. So yeah, as the last speaker, I would like to conclude as well that this workshop has been wonderful and we learned a lot of things. And I think this reinforced the idea that physicists are really interested in the formation and control of ultra-cold polar molecules. This has been emphasized recently as well in this special issue of chemical reviews about ultra-cold molecules. And okay, so these polar molecules are of course very interesting because they offer a lot of application and perspectives, as we heard from this workshop, in quantum control chemistry, quantum simulation, quantum information, and precision measurements. So back in 2008, 2010, so this was the early ages, let's say, of polar molecules. So the most popular molecules were the electric polar molecules here, made of heteronuclear alkali atoms. And of course, a lot of work has been done on this, especially on KRB at GILA. So we heard by Junier and Anna Maria Reyes that we are starting to see now signature of many body effects of dipole-dipole interactions in 3D optical lattices. But there is another class of polar molecules, which are electric and magnetic polar. So we heard as well a lot of talks on this. So for example, by Dave DeMille with strontium fluoride molecules. Prospect to do strontium rubidium molecules by Florian Cech and Jeremy Hudson. Prospect to do lithium ytterbium by Sub. Prospect to do ytterbium cesium by Simon Cornish. And OH molecules. So this was a talk by Matt Raymond and in the group of Junier. And this is nice because we can now control these polar electric and magnetic polar molecules with both electric and magnetic fields. And this is what I'm going to talk. So I'm going to study the dynamical properties, that is the collisions of these polar molecules in arbitrary electric and magnetic fields. And I'm going to take the OH molecules as an example. So OH molecules, so this is in the ground electronic state. The ground electronic state of the OH molecules is a 2 pi 3.5 state. And generally, 2 pi molecules are described by a Hund's case A type, so with quantum number J, MJ, omega J, and lambda and sigma. So I'm going to explain these quantum numbers. So J is the represent the total angular momentum of this molecule. MJ is the projection of J onto a quantization axis in the space fixed frame. Omega J is the projection of J onto the molecular axis. Which is the sum of lambda plus sigma, which are the projection of the electronic orbital momentum and electronic spin momentum. And so for OH molecules, omega J is 3.5. Lambda is equal to 1 here because it's a pi state, and sigma is 1/2. And usually this, in Hund's case A, you have a degenerate energy level corresponding to omega j equal plus 3.5 and minus 3.5. So electron going like this and electron going like this along the molecular axis. But it turns out that you have this motion of the electrons are in a rotating frame. So you have couplings between the electronic spins and rotation degree of freedom. And these couplings gives rise to a lambda doublet splitting. So this this breaks the degeneracy of the energy levels. And so this is called the lambda doubling. And we often use a parity adapted basis set. So J, MJ, omega J, epsilon, which is given by this linear combination of these quantum numbers here, where epsilon here is equal to plus and minus 1 and describe this lambda doubling. So when epsilon equal plus 1, we have a E state, and epsilon equal minus 1, we have a F state. And this gives rise to eigenvalues plus delta over 2 minus delta over 2, so which is plotted here. So this is the spectrum of OH molecules in the 2 pi 3 half state. And we are going to be interested in this state here. So this is the lowest one here with the E and F state. So just to give you some numbers, it's not in scale, but the lambda doubling is about 80 millikelvin. And just to give you another number, it's the first rotational excited state is about 100 Kelvin high. So we are kind of well separated from all the other states at low and ultra-low energies. Okay, so in the 2 pi 3 half states, we have a magnetic dipole moment of two Bohr magnetons, and an electric dipole moment of 1.67 Debye. And so you see that when we apply an arbitrary magnetic and electric fields, where we can vary as well the angle between the two fields, the magnetic dipole moment will have the tendency to precess over the magnetic field here, while the electric dipole moment will have the tendency to precess more around the electric field. So we have the Zeeman effect when we apply the magnetic field. So this is the expression of the Zeeman effect in this parity adapted Bayes set. And what you have, and so here I chose the Z, the quantization axis along the magnetic field here. And what you have to know here is that the Zeeman effect mix quantum numbers of same parity, so E to E or F to F states, and delta MJ equal zero, so same MJ quantum numbers.
So the magnetic field will couple different omega states, right?
Sorry?
Magnetic fields will couple different omega states, so there's omega?
Yes, okay, so we assume weak couplings between the other omega state, the one half state, in this case. So
you are using like a two-state model.
What do you mean, two states?
The
coupling to the pi.
But you are assuming that you couple only the lowest two states, huh?
Yes, so this is going to split in a magnetic field. So we have the E and F parity, and because we have J equals 3 half, so we have 4 MJ's values. So this is going to make 8. Eight
but I mean, you are working on
Yes,
this.
Yes, on this manifold, yes.
But why? It's not hard to include the other one.
No, that's not hard, no. I think...
Because for OH, well, I have a paper now that for OH you really need a strong field to have any influence of the large, of the next year.
Well, there will be some significant, but it's
going to be modest. We did everything, Roman, as you said, but you really need a strong
magnetic field.
No, yeah, magnetic and electric, but the magnetic field you need is still like 3 or 4 Tesla. And you are not going to 3
And
or
you,
four
you
Tesla.
Couple this one actually, so the same J, I guess, and which
then
is...
Then you're not going to go to 3 or 4 Teslas.
No. More like 1,000 Gauss, yeah, so less than 1 Tesla, yeah. Okay, so... And then you have the on top of that the Stark effect, which is represented by this matrix element here, which can have an angle here, an arbitrary angle theta. So you have these terms in the Stark effect expression now. So spherical harmonics with one and so delta MJ can take zero and plus or minus one values, and this mix different quantum numbers with different parities. And so when the electric field and the magnetic field are aligned, it turns out that the delta MJ still is equal to zero. But when the electric field is perpendicular to the magnetic field, so the delta MJ here should be plus or minus one. So the MJ equals zero, the delta MJ equals zero is not allowed, or it's this term will be zero otherwise. And if it's just in between, all the values are allowed. So for delta MJ equals zero plus or minus one. So when you apply an electric field, you are going to mix the different parities and as well different MJ's states, so in an arbitrary configuration. So of course, OH molecules are ideal candidates to put them in an optical lattice. So for studying many-body physics with arbitrary magnetic and electric fields to control them. So this is not what I'm going to talk today. I'm going to put the OH molecules in a different context. And this is the context is the study of OH molecules in a magnetic quadrupole trap, so which is related to recent experiment in Junye's group, where they saw some evaporative cooling of OH molecules in this magnetic trap due to large elastic cross sections. And so here I'm going to study OH-OH collisions in this magnetic trap, but in the presence of an electric field. So actually the loss of the OH molecules in the magnetic trap. And I'm going to consider the highest, so the OH molecule, the initial state of the OH molecule will be the highest state of the J equals 3 half manifold. So this is the F state MJ equals 3 half. So this is the one they prepare in this experiment here. So this is a low field seeking state. So of course you have high field seeking states which are below and inelastic collisions are possible. So this is what I'm going to, and this will result in loss mechanism. Normally the reaction OH-OH give O plus H2O is exergic, so it can react as well, but I'm not taking into account for now in this talk. Okay, so now last slide on the theoretical formalism. So I use a time-independent quantum formalism based on Jacobi coordinates. So I use rigid rotor for the OH molecules. And I use the relative separation of the two OH molecules here. So the total wave function is expanded into a basis set of partial waves. And so theta phi are the angular, the angles of the orbital motion between the of the colliding system. F of r is the radial function. And times I1, so which is the internal state of molecule 1, I2 is the internal state of molecule 2, and eta is an additional quantum number for permutation symmetry because they are identical molecules. And I1 is just J1, MJ1, omega J1, epsilon 1, and same thing for I2. And I solved the Schrodinger equation using a closed coupling formulation to get usual differential set of a set of differential equation for the radial function here with coupling matrix elements. So this is the one that will be responsible for inelastic collisions. This coupling matrix element is given by the electric dipole-dipole interaction, so which is given here. So I neglect the magnetic dipole-dipole interaction because it's smaller than with the hyperfine structure constant squared, smaller than electric dipole interaction. And by applying asymptotic boundary condition, I get the rate coefficient for elastic and inelastic collisions. So now this is what I'm going to start here. So this looks big.
Do with the short range.
No, I'm not worried about the short range. So I just put a ball at short range, right? Yes.
What distance?
50 bore. 50, yes, 50 bore. So I can include like a reaction mechanism, like a loss at short range, for example. So this will be for later, like how kind of we did for KRB or like Gerrit did for his NH-NH collisions. So here is the density. Okay, so this is, I'm showing you here, the position in the magnetic trap. So rho and z are the cylindrical coordinates of the position in the trap, and normally you have the azimuthal angle phi, which is symmetric here. And this is the density of the molecules at time t0. So this is provided me from the experimentalists. But I just plotted the density divided by the total number of molecules because they are not, they don't know their number of molecules. And the second plot here is just the magnetic trap. So this is again the same thing, that is depending on where you are on the trap. The z axis, I'm going to put an electric field along the z axis here. And the magnetic trap is given by this quadrupole expression here, which depends on the position x, y, and z with different magnitude with the gradient of the magnetic field of 2.2 tesla per centimeter. And if you look at these things here, you can plot the magnitude and the direction of the magnetic field as a function of where you are in the trap. So for example, So these are lines of magnetic field. So this is 0 Gauss, this is 500 Gauss, this is 1000 Gauss, and this is 1500 Gauss. And these are lines of direction of the magnetic field. So this is when B and E are pi over 2, so when theta equals pi over 2 here. This is when they are 3 pi over 4, and this is where B and E are anti-aligned, like this. So just to give you an illustration, if you take 3 points in the trap, so here are my electric fields, and here are my magnetic fields. So you see that it depends. So the OH molecules or the collisions will depend on where you are in the trap, and this will give different magnetic and electric field configurations. Okay, so as you are going to move inside the trap, you are going to have different magnetic and electric field configurations. So this is what I just said. And so I'm just going to plot now to show you the energy of one molecule. And this is the energy of two combined molecules as a function of the electric field. So this is the Stark effect, if you want. And depending on where you are in the trap. So here we are here in the trap. And as you move here on the trap, you see that you have, of course, different energy of the molecules. So this, you have no avoided crossing here because delta MJ is a good, so you mix the same parity and, so the B and E are aligned here. And when you go further in the trap, so you can start to have avoided crossing here because the B and E are not aligned anymore here. And you can finish here at pi over 2 here. Okay, so now this is for just one, the energy of one molecule, but what we want to see is the kind of the effective potentials between two OH molecules. So maybe I should have said that before. So when I had this diabatic coupling matrix element, so usually we can diagonalize this one and add the diagonal centrifugal terms, and we get the adiabatic energy. So this is what I plotted here, and this gives an intuition of how this gives kind of effective potentials for the two OH colliding system. And here I'm plotting this adiabatic energy as a function of the distance between the two OH molecules. I'm still at this position here. And
is the top curve zero?
It's what?
Is the top curve your entrance channel?
I
just go to the next slide. I think you're going to go there.
Oh, yes. So I take the initial, the two OH initial molecules. So I'm in the highest excited rotational state. And this is a zoom here just, and this goes to zero here. Yeah. And of course, this can collide or to de-excite to other inelastic channels here. And this is for zero electric field, I guess. So yeah. So I'm just considering a collision energy of 1 μK as well. So this is ultra low energy. And so I have a repulsive van der Waals interaction here. So this comes from all the pushings, if you want, of all the other states below here and makes this repulsive van der Waals interaction. And as I'm going to increase the electric field, so yeah, here it is. So from 0 to 3 kilovolt per centimeter. So I still have the repulsive van der Waals interaction, but now I have an attractive dipole-dipole interaction. So I get this kind of well here. And I can, for each of these electric fields, I can compute this inelastic rate coefficient. So this is what you see here, centimeter cube per second as a function of this electric field at this particular position here. And you see that you have a constant behavior here and then a rise of the inelastic rate coefficient. So this corresponds to a virtual state, if you want, that becomes in resonance with the collision energy here and just give rise to a resonance. So you can do this for other points here. So let's say this point here and this point here. And you can have other rate coefficients. So here you have
this resonance that you're getting?
Yeah, sorry?
Won't this pick up the same interpretation like the green one?
Yes, so this is like shifting this resonance because so the for this, for here and here, this potential will get deeper and deeper. So it will be easier if you want to, it will the resonance will appear quicker in the electric field as a function of the electric field. So you can do the same thing for each point of the trap here, and then you can get this kind of picture here. So again, this is the where you are in the trap, and the color represents the inelastic rate coefficient. Here I'm at zero electric field, and the color is, so deep blue is like 10 to the minus 14 centimeter cube per second, so it's very small. And then green is like 10 to the minus 13, and red is 10 to the minus 9 centimeter cube per second. So this is only for zero electric field. So I just have to do a last step here. What I want to have is the evolution, the molecules number evolution with time. And what I have to do is to play with the local rate equation for each point in the trap here. So this is n dot. This is given by n dot is equal to minus beta n square. So when I integrate this differential equation, I get an expression for the density called the local density as a function of the initial one here. And because I know beta for each point, and I know as well the density, so I'm going to explain just right now, I can get the evolution number of the molecules as a function of time. Here, because I'm I want to plot the n as a function of t, but I'm plotting a rescaled number as a function of rescaled time because I don't know this n dot here. So if you want, I'm going to plot n tilde is equal to n divided by n dot as a function of time, which will be, no, time tilde, sorry, which will be t divided by n dot as well. And I'm going to do this for different electric fields. So this is what I have for the zero electric field. So the rate coefficient is almost zero here, so I have not much loss evolution, if you want, or not much molecules are lost. When I increase the electric field, so 0.5, there is not too much difference. Now at 1 kilovolt per centimeter, you see that we have a different loss rate depending on where you are colliding in the trap. So at pi over 2, you have almost no inelastic rate, but when B and E are aligned, you have more and more inelastic loss. And so you can see it on the molecular evolution as a function of time here. So you can repeat this for different electric fields, so 1.5, 2, 2.5, and 3. And so I found, so I fitted the numerical results with this expression here. And I found that this expression fits well these expressions. And I plotted, so it's 1 over 1 plus A1 times T rescaled time to the power A2. And I just plotted A1 and A2 here, so as a function of the electric field. So you can think of A1 being a global decay rate in the entire trap, and A2 being just the exponent of this behavior here. And so what you can see here, so for collision energy of 1 micro K, so you can see a large dependence of the inelastic loss as a function of electric field. So, but in the experiments, they are more at temperature like 50 milli K, or 50 milli K. So if I did the same for a collision energy of 20 milli K, I have no more behavior of the inelastic loss as a function of the electric field here. And this is somewhat I cannot explain. So here are the experimental result. So this is given to me by Junier and Ben Stuhl. And what they see is they measured the two body decay loss as a function of the electric field here. So this is more. So I'm from 1 to 3 kilovolt per centimeter. So this is going to be just this square here. And they see something like constant here, and then something increasing by just maybe one order of magnitude here. And this resembles more this kind of picture than this one here. So this is still a mystery for me to understand why they have this huge electric field effects in their trap. And so for future work, so this is a temperature of 50 milli K, and this was just only collision energy here. So I just maybe want to take the temperature into account in the magnetic trap, as well as the dynamics of the molecules in the trap. So using just classical trajectories in this trap and a Monte Carlo condition when they collide and when they are lost from the trap to try to figure it out, this kind of electric field dependence. Okay, so that's it. Thanks for your attention. Yes?
So how do they determine the temperature?
I mean, I don't know. I think they told me that this was 50 millik. So I think they have this Maxwell-Boltzmann distribution of the molecules in the trap, and they fitted. Yes, they managed to do evaporative cooling. So they started from 50 millik, and they saw this Maxwell-Boltzmann distribution going down to 5 millik. So because of this repulsive van der Waals interaction and high elastic collisions.
Sorry, I must have missed this. Can you explain, maybe in plain language, why the inelastic losses are so insignificant?
They are insignificant? Well, here, for example?
Why the evaporative cooling is possible?
I should come back to. So this is not the this talk, but where it is. So you can you can look at the adiabatic energies here. Okay. So they start from two OH molecules here.
Right.
And maybe I should zoom here. And so you have this repulsive van der Waals interaction. So this comes from the dipole-dipole interaction from all the other states here. And so normally, in usual molecules, you are starting in the ground state here, and you have an attractive van der Waals interaction because all these dipole-dipole terms here push. So this is in second-order perturbation theory. So you have, it's the dipole, the elements of the dipole moment squared divided by the difference of the energies in the denominator.
To me, is that the couplings between the states are so weak that you don't have a lot of inelastic. And also, do you get significant enough barriers? And like the barriers are higher than 50 millikelvin?
Which barriers?
So this repulsion is going to go over to attraction at some point, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay, yes. So, so you have the first rotational excited state, which is at 100 Kelvin. So which it's way much above. This is 100 millikelvin here. So if you do kind of qualitative calculation. So the attractive C6, the n equal 1 state will become important maybe at shorter distance here. So this will turn out maybe at shorter distance than 50 atomic units. So I think it was 20 or so.
Yeah, so how big is the barrier?
Oh, this barrier, so I did not calculate it, yeah.
But John Bond did calculated it a long time ago, right?
Yeah, no, I think he neglected it as well. No, I think the paper of Sasha Avdenkov,
right.
I think they neglected this the highest rotational term as well.
So Chris, did you expect this? Did you expect it to be possible?
I thought it was going to be, yeah. Can you go to the next couple of slides? I thought you had the
Whoops.
Keep going. I thought where we get the field length state cross sections.
What did you say?
Where's the elastic rate on this? Or is this?
Oh, the elastic rate is not here. Okay. I did not plot the elastic.
I see inelastic, which is green.
Yes.
Where's the elastic?
I thought
it was at 10 to the 10 or something. I thought it was something big.
Yes. So okay.
That's why I thought it was always possible because you had to stay away from the field length state when you get the potential law. You had to stay away from those. And as long as you stayed away from those, you were fine.
The elastic is going to be 10 to the 10.
I thought it was 10 to the 10. I thought
it was
10 to the
10. Yeah, so let's see.
Usually it's.
Oh, it's 10 to the 11. I'm sorry. Where
That's another slide here. So, wait, so that's the cross section? Yeah.
Okay, so it's 10 to the
11. That's the cross section here. So, not the rate, not what we compare. And this is at higher energy here. So, even at 20 millik, so at this. At mini case, we have this, let's say, one order of magnitude higher elastic cross section. It's higher at lower energy. It's higher, yeah. It's like two orders or more.
Yeah, I guess what I found surprising is that the inelastic losses are so low.
Well, so I think you showed that, right? When you have a magnetic field,
you just stayed really far apart with this thing. That's kind of the fun bit of it. Is you
right,
sort of,
but not at 50 millikelvin.
No, I don't disagree with that. I don't disagree with that. I mean, but you're still, high partial waves. I don't have a good answer for you. Absolutely.
Yes, yeah, so
I mean, obviously it works, right?
Yeah, it is kind of amazing, but.
So you are saying, you are amazed for the 50 mK. I mean, yeah, you want to know the barriers compared to the 50 mK, right? The barriers of
So also, what you're plotting is not exactly the true the entire picture, right? Because what you're plotting is the adiabatic state, right? The eigenvalues of the potential, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is just what I said, just to illustrate, to give an intuition. So, but
what I think about it is, you know, you have a diabatic channel and you have the couplings.
Mm-hmm.
And the couplings are going to be strong, but
yeah. So I use this diabatic. So it's a diabatic calculation. So it's not adiabatic or approximation, if you want. So just I'm propagating this diabatic methods. Yes.
No, I'm not questioning the results. I'm just being amazed.
I have a question along these lines, probably much more general, because I was just looking. Not that many people were there when we had this discussion. I think it was in the third week. Where basically exactly this question came up. Also, I think as a consequence of this evaporative cooling of the OH. What kind of molecules you need to do this? Namely, basically, all these lambda doubling.
Yes, but not
molecules are the promising ones. And the second question, and this is now my question, whether you can somehow say something to it, whether in principle it's possible to with some laser create some rest states that kind of mirror this lambda doubling structure, and therefore some kind of blue shielding or so that you can
yeah,
do
so
things like that with some molecules that don't have.
So the important thing is the decoupling from the rotational excited state, because of course these ones are going to push down after it's going to give an attractive attractive part of the C6 interaction. So for all the you have these blue shielding things with so what was it, Hans-Peter? So with this molecules in J n equal 0 and n equal 1. And with Rydberg things as well. So, but you have. So, I don't know if it's decoupled with the highest excited state as well. And so, this is particular to OH as well, because it's light and this rotational energy are far apart. So, if you think it's Gerrit, so with OH plus NO, NO is as well a 2 pi, I think it's 2 pi 1 half state, but the next rotational state is way much smaller than 100 Kelvin, so and it needs to take into account Gerrit in his calculation. So, and so that's pretty much, typical to OH molecules.
Could one say that if you want to do the same thing with a molecule where the rotational states are not that far apart, then you would have to cool down further before you can get into the evaporative result, or
Could you repeat? Sorry.
Sorry. So if you would have still a molecule, but which is not so light, which therefore has closer rotational states, right?
Yes.
Could you still, in principle, do the evaporative cooling if you free cool to a lower temperature?
Well, it depends on this, the barrier.
Low enough in temperature, Alexis's calculations show that you can do anything, right? So, I guess you can always make those repulsive barriers, right? If you go to nanocalvin temperatures, they will be.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
But the point is, if you are at that temperature, you probably don't need repulsive.
Right. You may still need some for it. I guess what you're saying is generally true. I guess I had a related question for Alexei in that sense, you know. So you did single molecules, right?
Which is at rigid orders.
Yeah. Single rigid orders. And so you calculated those barriers, but they were, did you remember the type of the barriers? And like, how cold did you have to be?
Yeah, so we need, what's the number? I think it was a hundredth of B or a tenth of B. The rotational constant.
Tenth of B would be.
No, it's a tenth of B. No, hundredth of B. I think.
Because B is generally what it's like. Well, it can be a. It's like a wave number, right? The tenth of that is.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
so I think it can be a tenth.
Yeah, it's 100 exactly. And
total wave, yeah.
So it wasn't really. So I mean, our hope was to get something that would work for, you know, John Doyle's buffer gas with molecules, and no way.
But it didn't. Yeah. But that's the temperature of John Doyle, kind of. Well, a little bit lower than that.
These things would work very nicely. The shield would work very nicely. Say June makes his KRB and he wants to say rapidly really cool.
Right.
That would in principle work, although in their particular case they can't do it because they actually cannot apply the microwave right now. They cannot apply the microwave Rabi frequency strong enough to make the shield.
Even if you could do it, could you keep the final part to keep the reaction from happening?
Sure. Of course.
Because
I mean that's the idea.
I mean, but there's more. There's also, I mean, for example, when you did the two D KRB, I mean, the reason you did that is that you didn't get a dipole.
Yes.
So a dipole co-op. So.
Maybe I found an easier way of keeping them apart. Right? So, do you think this will be a practical tool for actually, can they actually condense LH molecules?
Yeah, so then we have to, so I think the goal will be to put them in an optical trap or something like this, or at least to see further cooling down as well, because they are limited to their cooling down because of the, yeah, well, that's something experimental. So I think Matt explained this in his talk. He want to, yeah, do a different scheme to see more, so they are going to 5 mDK right now, and they cannot see further cooling because it's because of their, yeah, it's more technical, I guess. And they want to see if you can go down more cooler, yeah.
What would you need? What temperature
do you need for age? Oh, I don't know.
Is it heavy sodium?
OH?
Yeah.
It's heavy sodium?
I'm saying the
cesium,
right? So it's going to be a few hundred nanoK. It's not like hydrogen.
Oh, for the condensation.
For the condensation, it's going to be several hundred. It's not rubidium. It's not 10.
Yeah,
it's hundreds. Right? So.
Less heavy than sodium, right?
Well, it's just throwing a number out that we know the condensation temperature of, right? It's 100-ish or so, right, for sodium? Rubidium is lower. I could ask experimentalist.
Obviously, it depends on the component, right?
Oh, absolutely. The general TC is, you could be hundreds-ish, hundreds. It's a lighter thing.
But you have more molecules in this kind of experiments, I guess, than in the photosensation experiments, right?
I don't know. They don't know the number of the density, so that's still the.
I don't know the number.
Yeah, that's the still the. They are working on it, so.
Yeah, but potentially, you know, because you've got a greater source of molecules, we get them out of the boat almost, right? You don't have to make them.
It's true.
To make it by breaking something. So, an optimistic note or a pessimistic note to finish the program on?
Well, yeah, it's.
Pretty optimistic.
Yeah, no, I.
Honestly, if I would have thought that 4 years ago that we would even seriously be discussing that for the point,
no. Especially with double high volume.
Yeah. I think it's actually one optimistic.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks.